Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the show. We're live out of Central Texas right here. This is today's News Talk, and I am Brian McLean. Thank you for joining me today. Got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be joined by one of my regular guests, New York Patriot, NY Patriot, in the third hour of the show. And we'll be getting a NYC State of the New Normal York update. Talk about housing, sewage samplers, looking for new fake pandemics, and other strange facets of New York living in the new abnormal. In the second hour, I've got John Moody scheduled to come talk with us about the media, about his new book, and much more. That's going to be really interesting. And in this first hour, we'll be joined by lawyer and author John O'Connor for a return to the show. If you recall, he and I had a great conversation about his experience with Watergate, his books on the topic. We talked about climate, the climate alarmist cult, and the weapons that cultural manipulators wield against us. Very much looking forward to being rejoined by Mr. O'Connor here. Okay, real quick, Biden's pick for U.S. archivist shoots down ERA backers' hopes of shortcut to ratifying this amendment. Colleen Shogan told lawmakers that if she is installed as the next head of the National Archives, she will not short-circuit the process to add the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution. So that's pretty interesting. Maybe John can talk to us a little bit about that. Let's go ahead and introduce John right now. Let's see here. So, John, he's an expert on Watergate. He was the man who revealed the identity of Deep Throat in 2005 after 31 years of it being a mystery in Vanity Fair magazine, and was one of the lawyers working for the former Deep Throat, who was then revealed as former FBI Associate Director Mark Felt. Also, he hosts the Mysteries of Watergate podcast, and he is the author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. He also authored the Mysteries of Watergate, What Really Happened. Author and lawyer John O'Connor, welcome back to the show, Mr. O'Connor. How are you?
Hey, good to be with you. I just got to tell you, because of an emergency that's come up, I can only be with you now for about six more minutes, and then I've got an urgent. So I apologize for that. We've got the wires crossed here, and then something came up that's I just can't avoid it. So
that's okay. Well, since I have you for a limited amount of time, what's big on your radar this week?
Well, I'll tell you, on this Mar-a-Lago presidential record stuff, my real problem on all of it is that no one seems, including the court, including Trump's lawyers, by the way. The order was recently reversed that, in essence, prevented the Justice Department from investigating criminally. That was a no-brainer. Any court would have overturned that. It was probably went a little too far to try to keep the Justice Department from investigating something. Now, that said, two things that no one pays attention to, and I wanted to bring them up to you, Brian, because I think you've got a very open mind on these things and have a good, flexible knowledge of them. Everyone acts as if this is the National Archives that raised these issues about Trump. That's not so. They use the National Archives, but it's really Biden's White House. Biden's White House has a liaison to the archives, meaning they've got somebody that is politicizing the office. Trump didn't have that. I don't think Obama had it. A liaison to the archives? Why do you need a liaison to the archives? But the liaison is then dictating what the archives does, and they were the ones who made the criminal referral originally. Okay, so that's one of the problems. And then, of course, the second problem is no one seems to understand that under the presidential. So what I want to say is this is all a politicized thing. When Trump made his assertion of executive privilege, the court said, well, NARA, the archives, turned it down. Well, they didn't. They got advice from Biden's Justice Department to turn it down. So this whole thing is politicized. That's number one. Number two, nobody appreciates that the Presidential Records Act gives the president access, exclusive access, supposedly, to all his classified and unclassified documents for 5 years minimum, exclusive, to the exclusion of the president and Congress. The president can only look at these documents for an established need. Now, if you're doing a criminal investigation, yes, there's an established need to come in and look at the classified documents, but no one seems to realize that for 250 years, presidents owned these records, classified and unclassified, and only when Richard Nixon tried to destroy the tapes did they come up with this Presidential Records Act. But the idea is to keep things the same as they were, but just verify that the government owned them. It didn't mean the president didn't have access to them to the exclusion of everyone else. And that is what everybody forgets about. What is happening now is, Brian, this is really a ridiculous thing. Trump should have exclusive access. Let's not even talk about classifieds. Let's talk about them. Most of them are unclassified. They should be Trump's and Trump's alone. And because of this process and this biased, politicized process, the government has got the unclassified documents and Trump doesn't have them. Meanwhile, Obama for 6 years has had all his unclassifieds. He can do whatever he wants with. The archives hasn't touched them. So now we have this situation where Trump doesn't have any of his unclassified documents, which likely tell a lot about Biden and his secrets. I will tell you that. And perhaps a little on Russiagate, too. So rather than Trump having them, the government now has them, you know. And so the whole thing is a put up job, Brian. And that's what I would tell you. I'm about out of time here. But to me, if I can get that to your audience, that really Trump should be having these documents. This whole thing is about Biden getting this ammunition from Trump that Trump otherwise could have used. Trump could use unclassified documents to skewer Biden. Now he doesn't have them. Biden has them. And I don't think Biden's going to, because he's politicized the archives, I don't think the archives are going to give Trump access as they're required to do under the Presidential Records Act. That may take a couple of years. The midterms will be over. Maybe the 24 type of thing. Anyway, Brian, I've got to sign off. Let's do this again. I apologize profusely for my scheduling here. So, but I love talking to you. I want to get into Watergate with you and the effect on the media, and you and I should get into a nice conversation on that. So,
okay. I'm looking forward to that greatly. Don't worry about the scheduling today. I'll cover your article at American Greatness in your absence, and we'll pick up from there next time we speak.
Thanks, buddy. See you.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir. That's a great guest right there, everybody. Too bad he had to run today, but that's okay. These things happen. So that's author and lawyer John O'Connor. And if you want to check out some of his work, you can pick up his book, Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. That's an important one right there, folks, because this man is an expert. As I said in his bio there, you know, he was the lawyer for Mark Felt, who, as it turns out, was the whistleblower known as Deep Throat. So he's been in this and studying this stuff for a long time. And partisan advocacy journalism, right? Watergate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. I like the terminology that he's used there in the byline of the book. It's perfect because that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with journalism that advocates for partisan politics pretty much exclusively. So he definitely is a great person to speak to on these topics. So let's see here. I was going to talk with him at length about Mar-a-Lago, but that's okay because I have right here on my hot little browser one of his latest articles. It's called Hypocrisy Alert. And this will go into a little bit more detail. And I'll probably follow this up next week with a talk with one of my journalist colleagues, Mr. Mark Anderson, who's the host of Stop the Presses. He and I are going to take a little bit of a, feels weird to say this, only a week and a half later, but we're going to take a little retrospective look at President Biden, President Let's Go Brandon's blood red rant, all right? Also being called the V for Vendetta speech that happened back on the 15th. So that's we're going to take a bit of a deeper look at that one next week. So don't miss that. We'll look back on that one. Look way back into the past of, 8 days ago or whatever. So, but we're going to take a different angle on it. I think we're going to look at it from another lens, and I think it will circle back to what happened with the FBI Mar-a-Lago raid. But at any rate, let me channel Mr. O'Connor, since Mr. O'Connor had to get out of here today quickly. Again, this is up at American Greatness. And so that's amgreatness.com. And the article is called Hypocrisy Alert. No, not the death metal band. If the death metal band was coming, I would have to take the day off and go see them. But no, Hypocrisy Alert, the classic definition of hypocrisy by John D. O'Connor. This came out on September the 9th of this year. The media obsess over Donald Trump's alleged mishandling of classified documents from the FBI's Mar-a-Lago raid and defend the National Archives' treatment of documents from Barack Obama's two terms in the White House. But if we address the true object of last month's raid, unclassified documents, rational analysis reveals the hypocritical dishonesty of the overbroad search, which really amounts to a broad daylight theft of Trump's right to have exclusive access to his presidential papers. Before leaving office, Trump transferred some 650,000 pages of presidential papers to Mar-a-Lago. We now know that all told, approximately 900 pages of classified documents were among them, a comparatively small number. It is appropriate and expected for presidential papers to contain both classified and unclassified documents, especially given the confidentiality of so much presidential work. Obviously, classified documents should be stored more securely than unclassified papers. Let me pause right there and just jump in. That is very true. What John O'Connor is saying here is quite true, and there are very well-defined procedures for storing things that are marked classified. There are, at least, I don't know how it works at the presidential level, but at the worker bee level in government, it's very, very, very well regulated. There's pretty much, it's difficult to do things incorrectly because of the way that security manager offices work and the way that protocols work for moving data on and off of digital networks onto paper, taking them out of approved storage locations. These things are all documented. They're all documented. Unless things are wonky with the executive office, I have never been invited to the Oval Office. I've never done a cybersecurity audit up there. I don't know how things work. I wonder about how things work after after the whole Hillary server thing. I'm still, years later, completely befuddled and baffled by how that even came to be. The whole concept of the Hillary story is so far outside of those protocols, procedures, all that stuff when it comes to classified networks. Because, I mean, if you're going to do, it's one thing to have documents digital or hard copy and need to move those around, have those approved, have the paperwork that goes along with it. You can't just, you know, pick these things up and take them out of secure locations. You can't just email them off of the, you know, out of the secure network, which exists completely outside of normal internet that most of us are using, Nippernet, if you will. So I just don't understand that whole thing. Like, that was such an egregious violation of security protocols, of cybersecurity protocols, and of the laws and everything that works, that dictates how classified information is handled, moved, declassified, et cetera, et cetera. So Hillary, I just don't get it. I just do not get it. That should have been, well, you know, if it wasn't Hillary, it would have been a jailable offense. On so many levels, there would have been many, many, many charges levied on someone else. That's my estimation, at least. That's my analysis. That's my supposition. All right, we're going to take a station break here with today's news talk, and we'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
Colonel McGregor was saying that he really believed that this was going to be won by Russia. And it looked like this week that maybe Ukraine actually got a leg up militarily. I know never to believe this stuff, but I'm wondering what your take on it is.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any question that Ukraine did win some severe victories here. It looks like they lost the entire northern half of Luhansk there in eastern Ukraine. So that's a severe setback. You know, the question is, does that mean that now Putin's going to negotiate on Ukraine's terms? Does that mean that now he's going to double down in the war? Or he's just going to try to hang on to the status quo? I mean, the Ukrainian government's not going to stop. And the Americans and the Americans' allies all across Europe continue to arm and train the Ukrainian forces. They call it a special military operation and not a full-scale war. But more and more, politically, the framing is being changed inside Russian media that this isn't an invasion of Ukraine anymore. It's a war between Russia and NATO in Ukraine.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Government has taken our rights and will never give them back unless we make them. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm reading the Hypocrisy Alert article by John D. O'Connor, which is available at American Greatness, amgreatness.com. It just came out on September 9. John was here with us briefly in the beginning of the show, but he had to run. So we're going to schedule him to come back and have a longer discussion with us. We're going to talk about Mar-a-Lago a little bit more. But in the meantime, as a primer, we're going to go through his most recent article on this. And before the break, I was talking about classified, unclassified papers and networks, how those all work, and just trying to provide a little bit of context, because I actually have a little bit of experience in this. And I know that before I did, this was all sort of black box voodoo sort of media talk. So I'm going to carry on here. John pointed out in that last segment before I started doing my analysis that classified documents should be stored more securely than unclassified paper. And that is very true. If it's physical papers, there is a certain protocol for locked doors. Sometimes I don't even know what the full list is. I'm sure there's cameras and surveillance and all that. I'm sure there's plenty of that going on at Trump's house. So you should have checked all the boxes. And if you recall, there was discussion in the media about how the National Archives Office and the FBI had already been in talks with Mar-a-Lago, came and checked the setup and asked for a little bit more security, which I think is weird and probably was just a sort of a what do you call that when someone's going to rob your house and they go check it out first, casing the joint. That was most likely something similar to casing the joint. Anyway, back to the article here. By contrast, among Barack Obama's presidential papers were millions of classified documents. He transferred about 30 million pages of unclassified documents, apparently without verification by the National Archives, that in fact, all of them were unclassified, to an abandoned furniture warehouse in suburban Chicago, leased by the federal government for about $2 million a year. Wow, well, that's a stark difference, isn't it? So let me get this right. Obama leaves office, and among his papers were millions of classified documents and 30 million pages of unclassified documents without verification by the National Archives. Oh, boy. So they didn't even verify the unclassified were actually unclassified. They just said, oh, 30 million pages? Yeah, looks good. That's fine. And then this part really gets me. To an abandoned furniture warehouse in Chicago leased by the federal government for $2 million a year. So where Obama is keeping his millions of classified documents and his tens of millions of unverified, unclassified documents is actually being leased in some, well, the way John writes that, it makes it sound like it's some shady building. Abandoned furniture warehouse. What the hell is that? And the federal government is paying the lease on it at $2 million a year? Huh. Don't think the federal government is paying for the Mar-a-Lago house at all. Knowing Trump, I'm guessing is paid off anyways. Okay. Back to the article. Because the government is renting the warehouse space, the archives could claim that it had legal custody of these documents. Indeed, stretching the point tenuously, also physical custody, since after all, the government and not the Obama Foundation is the legal warehouse tenant. But we have no evidence that the archives has ever handled these documents, even for storage purposes. Now, that storage purposes is highly important when it comes to cybersecurity and information assurance. So if we're strictly talking about papers here, maybe information assurance is the proper term as opposed to cybersecurity, which would be one of the long poles in the tent with regards to the Hillary situation. Okay, and back to John's article here. Now, back to Trump. As of May, Trump had returned 800 classified documents, believing those were all that remained. In reality, his lawyers had missed about 100 pages or 11 sets of multi-page documents scattered among 360,000 pages in the boxes remaining after the first 25-box transfer in the spring. Was all the hoopla, including a military-style 30-agent invasion, really about these 11 straggling documents? Of course not. As any fair-minded person would immediately sense, these numbers alone show that the absurdly broad search was a mere pretext. But if so, what was the true goal of the invasion? It was not about 100 pages of likely stale recitations of the obvious, as most classified documents tend to be years after their creation. Rather, and this is the key fact, the Biden administration now has 650,000 unclassified documents, almost all of Trump's presidential papers, which it has no right to possess under the Presidential Records Act. To highlight his unjust treatment, Trump has claimed that the favored ex-president Obama kept 30 million unclassified documents. He later backed off his prior claim that Obama had kept classified documents, which the archives did store, but to which Obama has present access. But certain to leave no statement of Trump unsmeared, Maggie Astor of the New York Times was quick to affirm that the archives, quote, assumed legal and physical custody of Obama's presidential papers, with unclassified records maintained exclusively by the archives. Who is correct, Trump or the New York Times and archives? Well, we'll pick up right there after a station break here with today's news talk.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The number of Catholics has eclipsed the number of Protestants in sectarian Northern Ireland, a shift that may impact Brexit tensions between the UK and EU. A mainstream German newspaper has revealed the German federal state is operating hundreds of fake far-right social media accounts online. French President Emmanuel Macron claims that Russian foreign policy regarding Ukraine is dictated by the whims of President Vladimir Putin rather than rational thinking.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
So, who is correct, Trump or the New York Times and the archives? Surprisingly, Trump is correct. The New York Times and the National Archives are lying, at least when it comes to the common sense meaning of keep, maintain, and physical custody. In short, the Obama Foundation has unfettered possession and control of 30 million unclassified documents in a Chicago warehouse and has had such control for over 5 years, which is Obama's right under the PRA. No evidence exists that the archives has ever touched any documents in that warehouse. Indeed, there is uncontradicted proof of Obama's possession of these documents ever since he left office. So how can the Times and Biden and the Biden-controlled National Archives pass the red face test given these undisputed facts? They are playing games of sophistry and semantics. Unfortunately for them, they are not playing very well. Yeah, really. By way of analogy, an ex-husband might have legal custody of his child, but his ex-wife could have 100% physical custody. The husband would be correct if he claimed he had legal custody, but dishonest if he said he had possession of his children, or physical custody, or exclusive custody. The latter claims would be lies. By that same reasoning, so too are the transparently false claims of the Times and the National Archives. Under the Presidential Records Act, the PRA, the government, quote-unquote, owns the presidential papers while giving the ex-president a minimum of 5 years of access, so exclusive that the sitting president cannot access these documents except for some specific established need. But Biden's minions are examining Trump papers as we speak. Biden has no right to do this under the PRA. Well, before Obama left office, he arranged for the General Services Administration, directed by the archives, to lease a 74,000 square foot abandoned suburban furniture store for a total of $11.3 million over 6 years. Obviously, by selecting a Chicago area warehouse, the archives was accommodating the Obama Foundation, which had decided on a Southside Chicago location for its library. This accommodation was not inappropriate. Why? Again, because the law gives the ex-president a minimum of 5 years of exclusive access to his presidential papers. If the archives had put the warehouse in Washington, D.C., the location would be highly inconvenient for the presidential library and for the right of the ex-president to have access to the documents. And while the archives approved the warehouse as a temporary facility for Obama's use, it admittedly was not a facility approved by the archives for ultimate archival storage. So Obama not only has had exclusive access to these papers, but also the right to completely control the contract to digitize the records before eventually turning them over to the archives for permanent storage. Whew, man, it would be neat to go into that archives. Wouldn't that be cool if they just disclosed the whole of the presidential archives? My goodness, we might be able to save the planet if that was all public. Anyways, pie in the sky. While the New York Times and other media concentrate on the sins, real and imagined, of Trump, no one has asked if the archives was as accommodating to Trump as it was to Obama. Did the archives try to lease space in Palm Beach convenient to Trump as it leased space in Chicago convenient to the Obama Foundation? Did it try to establish the same semantic framework as per Obama, in which the archives could claim to possess the documents while allowing Trump the unfettered access required by law? These are good questions, John. Carrying on. Contrary to their public statements, the National Archives does not have possession or exclusive control or physical custody. Obama does. But now, post-raid, Trump has none. Is this equal justice under the law? The upshot, what is the upshot? The Mar-a-Lago raid was not about classified documents. It was about the Biden administration gaining access to 650,000 pages of unclassified documents to which it had no established need and to which it had no rights of access under the Presidential Records Act. What can we conclude from the foregoing? First, there was no need for a military-style search warrant to collect a few straggling classified documents. They could have been obtained either by further discussion or a motion to enforce a subpoena. Second, even if there were a hyped-up justification for a search warrant for classified documents, such a warrant should have been limited to the classified documents remaining, since there has never been any need demonstrated to seize unclassified documents, which, of course, is the lion's share of the search warrant's take. Third, it does not appear that the National Archives, directed by a liaison in the Biden White House, has made any arrangements to provide reasonable access to Trump to those papers that the Biden administration has seized, which is clearly required by the PRA. Fourth, under the PRA, Biden cannot access unclassified documents without an established need. Yet, while he has shown no established need, his minions have been examining them. Fifth, the National Archives, abetted by the New York Times, lied when it claims it has exclusive physical possession of Obama's unclassified papers. So, a bold-faced lie right there by the New York Times. Who'd have thunk it? Oh my gosh, my audience must just be shocked. knock their socks off. Actually, no. New York Times lies to us once again. Well, shocking. Not very shocking at all. At least part of Trump's unclassified papers were likely documents collected to show Biden corruption in Ukraine and China. But now Biden cleverly and illegally has gained access to these documents and is keeping Trump from his 100% legal access. In short, the lack of honesty of the Times and the National Archives is a set-in-stone marker of the partisan abuse of the criminal process in the Mar-a-Lago search. People lie when they have something to hide, and the Biden administration has plenty of sins it wants to keep from the public. That alone is what's behind last month's outrageous, unconstitutional search. Again, that was penned by John D. O'Connor, who joined us at the top of the hour there for a moment. And he's a former federal prosecutor and the San Francisco attorney who represented W. Mark Felt during his revelation as Deep Throat in 2005. And John is the author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. And, of course, the host of the podcast series, The Mysteries of Watergate, which I just discovered after I met John a week ago or so. So everybody should check that out. He's got some really interesting titles up there for his podcast. I'm going to have to dig in. More podcasts to listen to. Woohoo! You got to love that, right? Is anyone else drowning in awesome podcasts? Seems like podcasting and live independent streaming is really where the intellectuals of this country are hanging out, where people that actually want to try to figure out for themselves what the hell is going on want to hang out, because you're just not getting it in journalism, in mass media cartel journalism, because like in the title of John's book there, they do partisan advocacy journalism for the most part. So, yeah, pick up The Mysteries of Watergate and Postgate if you want to know more or hear more from John D. O'Connor, because, you know, a lot of these themes that we're talking about here, they go way back. They go way back. And his works could definitely provide a little bit of extra context when it comes to that. All right. So we'll have John back on the show soon. Now, anyways, back to that headline read from the top of the hour there. So what's going on here? This Colleen Shogan, Biden's pick for U.S. archivist. Very interesting, actually. I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know that I fully understand the ramifications of this headline, but let's go through it. Maybe we can figure it out together. So Colleen Shogan, again, told lawmakers that if she's installed as the next head of the National Archives, she will not short-circuit the process to add the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution. Now, that's pretty interesting. Ms. Shogan said it's up to Congress and the courts to decide whether the ERA, which Democrats have tried to revive from the legislative scrap heap, is valid. Okay, so you would think that with the Biden administration and the National Archives being so involved in this Mar-a-Lago thing, I'm a little bit surprised. I'm wondering what's the deal here. What's going on with Colleen Shogan kind of bucking the potential corruption there? Because this ERA, folks, if you don't know, the ERA, Equal Rights Amendment, has been shelved since the 70s because the wording was just not really right. States weren't ratifying it. Some states did. Some states pulled the ratification back. And I seem to think that it probably did not pass because it was unnecessary and redundant. But I don't know. Let's see here. Let's see if we can figure this out. So the fact that Ms. Shokin said it's up to the Congress and the courts to decide is a good sign. You would think, okay, that's we need a little bit more of that sort of thinking on Capitol Hill. She said, I think who will decide the fate of the ERA is the federal judiciary and or Congress, end quote. She said that on Wednesday under questioning by Senator Rob Portman, R from Ohio. She also agreed to be bound by a 2020 Justice Department opinion that concluded the ERA, at least the version Congress submitted to the states in the 1970s, is a dead letter and cannot be resuscitated. Her comments came during a hearing before the Senate committee. And this was a confirmation hearing, I believe, so she must be confirmed by the Senate before she takes the archives job. And we'll pick up on that after a quick break over here. You're listening to the Brian McClain Show on Today's News Talk, and we'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Who says politicians can't keep their campaign promises? In an apparent attempt at matching the record of President Donald Trump, who kept virtually every campaign promise he made from the time he came down the escalator to the time he raised his right hand and took the oath of office, racist New York Attorney General Letitia James is trying to keep her campaign promises too. You might recall that James, while seeking the office that in New York State is typically seen as a stepping stone to the governorship, promised to go into work, sue Donald Trump all day, go home at night and come back the next day and do it all over again. She even went so far as cooing in the ear of a prospective constituent who asked if James would sue Donald Trump for her. Oh yes, I'm gonna sue Donald Trump. I'm gonna be a pain in his ass. Well, she's doing it again, folks. James brought yet another lawsuit against the president, his children, and his companies. This has got to end. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The 9/11 terrorist attacks led to the so-called War on Terror. But there's another side to 9/11 which, unlike the mainstream media, TNT Radio won't censor. Consider Building 7, the third World Trade Center building, which collapsed later that same fateful day. Professor of Civil Engineering, Dr. J. Leroy Hulsey, led a research team which demonstrated that the official US government version of the Building 7 collapse is a scientific fraud that defies the laws of physics. This leaves us with some very troubling questions about the entire 9/11 attacks. Dr. Hulsey's team issued a final report in March of 2020. It concluded, "The collapse of WTC-7 was a global failure involving the near simultaneous failure of all the columns in the building and not a progressive collapse involving the sequential failure of columns throughout the building."
When you listen to us, you're always guaranteed straightforward, easy to understand, coherent conversation.
So I made it a priority my entire career to work closely with you from the time I got to the Senate 180 years ago.
And we stand by those words.
But I made very clear to Putin that we're not going to seek excuse me. So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you, that you like to be able to. Anyway.
Oh, man. Just stop talking.
TNT.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. So we're talking about the National Archives today. And go figure, Biden's new pick for U.S. Archivist is, I don't know, I'm a little surprised by this, shooting down the ERA backers. If you read about the Equal Rights Amendment, you'll see this would be the kind of thing that you would expect a Biden pick to actually just jump all over. But so far, just judging by this article I'm reading here, it seems as though the Ms. Shokin is actually the type of person who would want to see the federal judiciary and or Congress make decisions about constitutional issues. So that's interesting. Under the law, the archivist is in charge of collecting documents related to amendments to the Constitution and is usually the one who certifies that the requisite 3/4 of states have ratified a new amendment, which adds it to the founding document. But the ERA's path to ratification has stymied easy certification. It was proposed by Congress to the states in 1972, with lawmakers putting a 7-year limit on ratification. And as the 1979 deadline approached, just 35 states had ratified, or 3 shy of the number needed. So obviously it was not popular enough in the 70s, in 72 or 79, to get ratified, and it just languished. Congress then approved legislation purporting to extend the deadline for 3 more years. So that gave them until 1982, right? But guess what? No new states ratified by 1982, and the amendment was generally thought dead. But in the last decade, oh my gosh, so much has happened. So much has changed. It's not even the same culture we had 10 years ago. What is it? 2022? Think back. Think back 10 years ago. Wow. We thought things were a little messed up 10 years ago. Look at us now. Look at us go now. In the last decade, though, backers convinced state legislatures that the amendment could be reviewed and got Nevada, Illinois, and Virginia, all original holdouts, to hold ratification votes. The backers then submitted those votes to the archives and demanded certification, saying both the 1979 deadline and the 1982 deadline were invalid. They also said 5 states that had voted to revoke their ratifications in the 1970s should be ignored. So you got to wonder what's up with that, because that's a pretty tall order for just in the last 10 years here, people that want to back this ERA, doing their best to convince legislators that this should be revived. And of course, they got Nevada, Illinois, and Virginia, not impressed, to hold ratification votes on this ancient, decades-old ERA Act. Amendment, ERA is Equal Rights Amendment. We're talking about an amendment to the Constitution here. This is, kind of serious topic. So, the people that wanted to have this, they say, well, you know, we got these, we got Nevada, Illinois, and Virginia hold ratification votes. And then the backers submitted those votes to the archives and demanded certification. And in the demands, they're saying, that 1979 deadline, that 1982 deadline, don't worry about those. Those are invalid. Oh, and also the 5 states that voted to revoke their ratifications, ignore those. So why the heavy push for this? And curious that Biden's pick for U.S. archivist would shoot it down, Colleen Shogan. So I don't know whether to give her props or just leave a big question mark under her name. Why is she chosen if she seems to have a sort of constitutionally minded attitude? I find that very interesting, because this Equal Rights Amendment was just dead. It's just dead. And what does it actually do? Let's talk about that for a second here. What was this proposed amendment to the United States Constitution? What was it designed for? Well, according to the Ministry of Truth, the dreaded Wikipedia, so we can only expect to get a certain percentage of truth here, or we can expect to have to read between the lies, probably, because I don't know who it is out at Langley that edits Wikipedia 30,000 times a day. Did I say Langley? I don't know that for sure. I don't know where this person is, but there's one account that is literally doing thousands of edits on Wikipedia a day. We've flagged that up as a very interesting anomaly in the American sphere, the American data sphere, news and infotainment sphere. Anyways, they say that this proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution was designed to guarantee equal rights for all American citizens, regardless of sex. Proponents assert it would end legal distinctions between men and women in matters of divorce, property, employment, and other matters. The first version of an ERA was written by Alice Paul and Crystal Eastman and introduced in Congress in December of 1923. Very interesting. You think about the culture in 1923 versus the culture in 1972 when it came up again, 79, then 83, and now 2022. Culture is completely different. And one of the things I don't understand about this is that 1923 era, when you say, you know, when you read a proposal like that, where they assert ending legal distinctions between men and women, matters of divorce, property, employment, and other matters, that would mean something totally different in 1923 as it does in 2022. I don't even think most of us can really comprehend the magnitude of some of those differences and what some of those people like Alice Paul and Crystal Eastman were probably trying to accomplish with this. And how can that language be bent and sort of changed, maybe even culturally weaponized against us if a modern version of this were to go through? I don't know, because it seems to me, just sort of as a media maniac, that the legal distinctions between men and women are an utter mess right now. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say what a woman is. You know, if you've watched Matt Walsh's documentary there, What Is a Woman? Clearly, the language has been completely messed up. And in matters of divorce and property and employment, wow, okay. Well, that's a whole nother rabbit hole that we're probably not going to have time to get into today, but I have a feeling that our listeners out here at TNT kind of know what I'm leaning into here when it comes to the differences in the way people are treated in matters of divorce, property, employment, and other matters. All of a sudden, what the current progressive culture wants is they actually want different treatment between men, women, and all the other alphabet soup identities that people tend to identify for themselves, cling to, whatnot. You look at divorce, it's a mess, it's a racket, it's highly weaponized against fathers. You look at property, well, I don't know, arguably property is just fine as it is, and we have a financial problem there, not an equal rights problem. And then you look at employment, well, gosh, you know, California tried to pass a bill that said any board members, board members of large companies had to have all these different sort of oppressed people, marginalized people on their boards. They're trying to force businesses to do diversity hires and cultural hires rather than hires based on merit and capability, things like that. So I'm quite confused about this whole ERA backer thing and Biden's pick for a U.S. archivist shooting it down. I tend to think that that is generally good news. I do not want anybody in there messing with the Constitution at this point. I think the worst thing that could happen to this country constitutionally would be more amendments that are partisan in nature, that support cultural degradation in this country. That's the last thing we need. And God forbid any sort of constitutional convention, because once that happens, we're done. We are absolutely done. I mean, as it is, the Constitution, you know, the people are a lot of people are kind of browbeaten and just not really feeling like they live in a constitutional republic anymore. But there's good news in this department, folks. I'll point to the Second Amendment community right now. The ramifications of New York Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, that decision that came out of the Supreme Court, it's magnanimous. All kinds of cases right now are being heard. We had a Texas judge here this week dismiss a case because I don't remember the exact title and code, but there's a guy here in Texas who had been indicted, right? He did not convicted of anything. He'd been indicted for something. And he went and he tried to purchase a firearm. And there's a block on the form when you purchase a firearm that says, are you under investigation for a felony, something like that. And he checked no on there, and they flagged him up for it. They arrested him for it. And the judge turned around and said, you know what? Because of New York Rifle and Pistol Association decision by the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court ruled based on a constitutional precedent, this isn't going to fly. We're going to throw this out. And that's happening in a lot of cases right now. A lot of cases are getting kicked over to the circuit courts. And guess what? That Fifth Circuit Court here in Texas, they don't like to mess with people's 2A. So, you know, it's important that the Constitution is protected here. And I really hope that this person, Colleen Shogan, might help do that. I don't know. Doesn't seem likely since Biden picked her. But oh well, we're going to go to top of the hour news. We will be right back on the other side.